Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, July 24th. Midland housing market stays red hot. Texas A&M Real Estate Report says area broke multiple records in June, by Stuart Doreen. Home sales in Midland again obliterated previous records. The Texas A&M University Real Estate Center reported the seller's market in Midland stayed red hot, with records set for home sales in a month, 335, and dollar volume for homes sold, $119.056 million, during the month of June. And it wasn't that records were topped. The 335 homes sold in June was 12% higher than the previous record, 299 homes sold in April. The dollar volume was 11.5% higher than the $106.594 million in homes sold in April. Also, the Texas A&M Real Estate Center is showing new highs for homes sold during a three-month period, 903 from April through June, and during a four-month period, 1,160 from March through June. Other highlights from the report included a rebound in the prices paid for houses in June. The Real Estate Center showed the average home in Midland County sold for $355,394, which was an increase of more than $24,000 compared to May. The median sales price of a home was $313,700, which was $18,700 more than May, and the highest median price going back to February. The blip in the monthly statistics came in the areas of homes available at the end of the month and months of inventory. The A&M Center showed 712 homes available, which not only ended a streak of months with declining total listings at four, but was 50 more homes than at the end of May. The months of inventory again reached 3.0. Prior to June, the center showed three straight months of inventory numbers on the decline. In Ector County, sales and dollar volume reached levels not experienced since 2019, according to the A&M Real Estate Center. Price levels were the best of 2021, and unlike Midland, total listings and months of inventory dropped from May to June. July will be an interesting month as it is historically one of the best months for sales and price in Midland County. Small quakes shake region. Pecos and Midland rattle as number of tremors continues to increase, by Stuart Doreen. At 7:54 p.m. Thursday, a 2.4 magnitude earthquake hit 6.8 miles north of Midland, according to the website earthquaketrack.com. The site showed the quake, which took place at a depth of 5.59 miles, was the seventh around the immediate region during the past week, the 23rd in the last month and the 162nd over the last 365 days. The region stretches from Andrews to La Mesa to Big Spring, but Midland has been a focal point with 10 quakes around the city in the last 2 weeks. EarthquakeTrack.com showed that of the seven this week around the more immediate region, four had a magnitude less than 2.0, two had a magnitude between 2.0 and 2.5, and the strongest one within a week, magnitude 3.0, took place just before 8 a.m. on July 16th. The website shows earthquakes are increasing. A Reporter Telegram article from early June showed there had been 132 quakes over the previous 365 days. Still, those numbers don't compare to what is being experienced around Pecos, according to the website. EarthquakeTrack.com reported Thursday night there had been 63 quakes over the last week, 211 during the previous 30 days, and 835 over the last year. A Reporter Telegram analysis of the site statistics showed 35 of the 63 quakes with a magnitude of less than 2.0. There were 26 between 2.0 and 2.5, and 4 greater than magnitude 2.5. including a magnitude 4.0 quake that took place just north of the New Mexico line on Monday. The 835 quakes also moved the Pecos region into exclusive territory, with more quakes over the last 365 days than the hot spots in Oklahoma, including the north-central region of the neighboring state. EarthquakeTrack.com reports 679 tremors in the region, that includes Enid. A quake with a magnitude of 2.5 to 5.4 is often felt, but only causes minor damage, according to Upsize, an educational site for seismologists. There are about 30,000 quakes each year, according to the site. Tremors registering at least a 2 on the Richter scale quadrupled from 2017 levels to a record 938 last year and are on pace to top that this year, according to a Rystad energy analysis of data in Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana, and New Mexico. Though earthquakes have long been linked to activity related to shale production, the report provides more evidence of the connection in the U.S. Southwest, where oil drilling has intensified in the past decade, a Bloomberg report in June stated. Failing no more. Idea Travis shows remarkable growth worthy of a B rating, by Stuart Doreen. The days of Travis Elementary in Southeast Midland being an F school appear to be in the past. The school came into the 2020-21 school year with one of the longest failing streaks in the state of Texas, and while the Texas Education Agency will not assign official accountability ratings, A through F, to schools, IDEA Public Schools officials stated Friday that using the exact 2019 formula for ratings, zero adjustments, IDEA Travis would have received a B. To provide a little context about Travis' growth, there were only 4 campuses inside the MISD that received a B or better for the 2018-19 school year. It's amazing, said Bethany Solis, executive director of IDEA Schools of the Permian Basin. I mean, these are things that people think are impossible, right? That a school that fails so many years, oh, it's not possible for those kids to progress that far in 1 year. No, it is, because it was never the kids' fault to begin with. IDEA Schools works with Midland ISD on what is called an in-district partnership. This past year was the first year for the partnership, which was created because of the failing streak and the reluctance of MISD leadership to allow a TEA takeover of the school or create a change, like took place with another failing school, the former Crockett Elementary in East Midland in 2017. Solis brought in Executive Principal Haley McCarthy, who had made her name with the turnaround of another IDEA school, IDEA South Flores Academy, in the San Antonio area. McCarthy created her own staff, including 90% first-year teachers and nearly 3 out of 4 from outside the region. The student body returned more than 500 that had been at Travis the year before, or around 80% of the population, and, according to Solis, started the 2020-21 school year, for the most part, around 2 grades behind and having never passed the STAR test before. Some of the accomplishments of those students included 83% of Travis students met or exceeded their individual growth goal on the STAR exam, 62% of all English learners met their English proficiency growth goal, an average of 1.5 years was made up during a year dominated by COVID. The expectation is that all students will be on grade level within 3 years to make the school an A school and to make sure academic achievement is sustainable over the longer term. It is exciting, and I am proud of their growth, but they will be the top students in Midland, period, McCarthy said. They will outperform everyone else. It will take a little time. It is the growth that keys the B grade, Solis said. While a school like Midland ISD's talented and gifted campus, Carver, obtains its high grade through absolute results, it is the remarkable growth that lifts Travis, she said. Only half of our students passed the STAR, but our growth was so remarkable that it qualified Travis for that B rating, as it rightfully should, because students made gains close to 2 grade levels worth in many cases, Solis said. Other metrics included that students in grades 3 through 5 averaged improvement in their reading by a grade and a half, that 93% of Travis students met or exceeded their growth target in math. In pre-K through 2nd grade, only 5% were reading on grade level at the beginning of the year. By the end of the 2020-21 campaign, 70% were on level with where they should be in that curriculum. All this, McCarthy and Sala said, has an impact. First, McCarthy expects 90% of students and staff to return to Travis for the second year. Second, it keeps Travis as a place where neighborhood and other families want their students to attend this choice school. The wait list at Travis at one time had surpassed 300. Idea Travis was a school that went through 6th grade last year. The campus will grow by a grade until current 7th graders are seniors in high school. McCarthy said that Idea Travis will continue to have high expectations for its students. The eventual high school, which will be built on land adjacent to the current property, will have AP courses and an international baccalaureate program. McCarthy said the only campus in Midland, Odessa, with an IB program is in Odessa. That is like the gold standard, McCarthy said. Idea Public Schools also has its sights set on building a second campus in Northwest Midland in the next few years and would like to keep partnering with the school district, including with a replication opportunity for another campus. Sola said that potential partnership is open to only existing partners, operators like Idea Public Schools and Third Future, operator of Houston Collegiate Prep. But Friday was about a celebration of a turnaround story, one Idea official said, is still a work in progress. This reminds us that remarkable academic change is possible with the same students and with new but talented and fast-improving educators, Solis wrote in a letter to supporters. The key is school leadership, and Travis is truly led by one of the best principals in the nation. Weekly COVID cases highest since February by Stuart Doreen. The number of COVID-19 cases inside Midland County has risen for 4 straight weeks and is guaranteed to be the highest since late February. Through Thursday, the Midland Health Department has reported 137 cases inside Midland County. That includes 36 cases on both Wednesday and Thursday, the most in one day going back to February 24th. The Midland Health Department is showing 137 cases through Thursday, which means totals Friday and Saturday will add to the increase week over week. There were 111 cases last week. One has to go back to February 21st through the 27th to see more cases in a week in Midland. There were 205 cases. Midland Health is reporting 22 COVID-19 patients in Midland Memorial Hospital on Friday. That includes 20 active patients. Midland Health also is reporting a 15.6% positivity rate at its testing centers, the highest since the week ending on February 6th. Obituaries and death notices from the MRT for Saturday. Donald O. Crawford, 89, passed away on July 21st. He was born on April 21st, 1932, to John S. L. and Maud Williamson Crawford in Petrolia, Texas. Don is survived. He was preceded in death by 2 grandchildren, Carly Crawford and Ryan Crawford. Don is survived by his wife, Beth, his daughter, Donna, and husband, Brian Gillette, sons, Alan and wife, Lisa Crawford, and Bruce Crawford, daughter, Brenda, and husband, Clifford Vinson. He is also survived by grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A visitation will be held from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, July 27th at Ellis Funeral Home, and a memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. on Friday, July 30th at First Christian Church of Midland. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to the American Heart Association. Doris Pearl Ferris of Bandera passed away Monday, July 12th. She was born December 25th, 1929, to Robert J. Wilson and Mary T. Vanderslice Wilson in Midland. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Gene E. Ferris, sons Edward C. Ferris and Ronnie D. Ferris. daughter-in-law Jackie Ferris and sister Wanda Wilson Burton. She is survived by her son Raymond G. Ferris of Bandera, her daughter Fonda L. Bolin, and husband Bobby G. Bolin, Jr. of Bandera. Grandchildren, 8 grandkids and 2 great-grandkids, numerous nieces, nephews, cousins, and many friends. The family received guests at Ellis Funeral Home Friday, July 3rd. Funeral services were held Saturday, July 24th at Ellis Funeral Home Chapel. Interment followed at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Patricia Ann Laney Keller entered into the joy of her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on July 14th. Born March 24, 1932, in Bushton, Kansas, to James Frank Laney and Clara Lee Wells Laney. In addition to her parents and husband, Gus, Pat was predeceased by her brother, William T. Laney, Hutchinson, Kansas, and daughter-in-law, Debbie Keller. Pat is survived by her 4 sons, Bill Keller and wife Lisa, of Tulsa, Oklahoma, Paul Keller of Granby, Colorado, Mike Keller and wife Colette, of Littleton, Colorado, and Carl Keller and wife Bonnie of Alamosa, Colorado. She is survived by her 10 grandchildren. She is also survived by 2 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, we invite our mother's dear friends to support the Alzheimer's Research Charity of your choice. Memorial service will be held at Grace Lutheran Church in Midland at a date to be determined. Reverend David L. Smith, S.J., passed away in Harlan, Iowa, on July 9th. He was born December 3rd, 1953. Preceded in death by parents Daryl and Darlene Smith, survived by siblings Sherry and husband Greg Folger, Lance and wife Sherry Smith of Midland, Leanne and husband Tony Gulizia, Cindy and husband Jerry O'Hagan, Brian and wife Sandy Smith, Alan Smith, Danny Smith, and Susie, and husband Patrick Vandeventer, and numerous family and friends. Funeral services were held Wednesday, July 14th, at St. Mary Our Lady of Fatima Catholic Church, Portsmouth, Iowa. Interment Holy Sepulchre Cemetery, Omaha. Please send memorials to St. Mary Our Lady of Fatima Catholic Church, P.O. Box 98, Portsmouth, Iowa, 51565. Tate Austin Crawford, 11 years old, fell into the arms of Jesus on Thursday, July 22nd, in Big Spring, Texas. The family will receive friends on Monday, July 26th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. A celebration of Tate's life will be held on Tuesday, July 27th, at 4 p.m. at First Baptist Church of Big Spring. Tate was born on October 10, 2009, in Lubbock. He is survived by his loving parents, Ashley and Rusty Crawford of Big Spring, twin brother Owen Crawford of Big Spring, brother Mason Crawford of Big Spring, grandparents Mary and Michael Thornhill of Brownwood, Clay and Sherry Kuykendall of Brownwood, Jerry and Sonia Crawford of Kahoma, great-grandfathers Charlie Garrett of Midland and Carl Crawford of Midland, aunts and uncles, and cousins. He is preceded in death by Sarah Crawford, great-grandmother, Buten Garrett of Midland, Maggie Garrett of Midland, Jeannie Garrett of Midland, Louise Bible of Brownwood, and Don and Jean Kirkendall of Brownwood. In lieu of flowers, please consider toys or monetary donations made in Tate's name to CASA or an animal shelter. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Cynthia Jarrett, 67, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, July 21st. A visitation will be held 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Monday, July 26th, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will take place 10 a.m. Tuesday, July 27th, at Calview Heights Baptist Church, with burial to follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Georgia Barley Reed, 74, of Midland, passed away April 9th. A memorial mass will be held 7 p.m. Thursday, July 29th, at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Survivors include husband Joe Reed and children Caroline Reed Gerhardt, Alan Joseph Reed Jr., Stephanie Reed Seitz, Melanie Teresa Campo, LTC, Nathan Thomas Reed, Natalie Patricia Martinez, and Susanna Reed Jackson. Online condolences and the full obituary may be found at www.npwelch.com. Guadalupe Armendariz Reyes, 64, of Midland, passed away Thursday, July 22nd. Viewing will be Monday, July 26, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass is set for Tuesday, July 27th at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by her husband Alvaro Ortiz Reyes, son Alvaro Reyes Jr., two daughters, Mariela Reyes and Clarissa Reyes Salcido, two brothers, eight sisters, 11 grandchildren, three great-grandchildren, and numerous nephews, nieces, and cousins. Margaret Ann Christian Prince took her journey home on Monday, July 19th, after a long battle with a heart condition. Receiving of friends will be Monday, July 26th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. A service will be Tuesday, July 27th at La Mesa Road Church of Christ, starting at 11 a.m. Margaret leaves to cherish her memory her sons Ricky Prince Jr. and Elijah Prince, her mother Janelle Christian, as well as three sisters, one brother, and one grandchild. Online condolences, lschristian1@gmail.com. Arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home and Chapel. Miguel Angel Santos, 29, of Midland, passed away Wednesday, July 21st. Viewing was Saturday, July 24th, and Sunday, July 25th. A funeral service is set for Monday, July 26th at 10 a.m. at Elevate Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his wife, Abigail R. Lozano, two sons, Armani Jeremiah R. Lozano, and Miguel Angel Santos, Jr., parents Carlos Santos and Lisa Valenzuela, grandmother Maria de Jesus Aleman Santos, two brothers Ryan Nicholas Santos and Orlando Ray Santos.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Odessa American, published Saturday, July 23rd, 2021. UTPB to city. Leave the fields intact. UTPB President Sandra Woodley sent a letter to Odessa's mayor and city council detailing that the council should not vote to allow local sports associations to remove permanent structures from the UTPB athletic fields. Woodley, in the letter, details that the university was informed that some associations will ask the council to allow them to remove bleachers, fences, goals, and other permanent structures that are currently a part of the UTPB complex. She thanks the city for the partnership for 25 years and writes that she hopes for a smooth transition. She also asks the city to leave the fields intact, and that the fields will be utilized by Odessans, including a number of community groups who have already expressed interest in using the fields. UT system attorneys also sent a letter to Odessa City Attorney Natasha Brooks, warning that the current lease only allows the city to remove structures and not any third parties. The letter also outlines what UTPB will allow in terms of removing any items. This follows a week of social media unrest regarding the fields at UTPB. The current lease expires at the end of August, and the city walked away from negotiations with UTPB. Despite a number of social media posts to the contrary, UTPB is not kicking any group off the fields. The university was asking for a lease that adheres to the current UT system guidelines. The city, meanwhile, has spent 25 years building up the facility with tax dollars. The OA has requested how much money has been spent in the last 25 years, but has yet to get that figure. Local sporting associations have made it clear that they wanted to continue to play for free at the facility. The original lease called for a $1 a year lease plus 10% of other funds. It is not clear if the city ever paid the $25, but no other monies have been paid to UTPB during the 25 years. Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven told a crowd at the fields that he plans to float a bond to build another recreation complex in the city. City Manager Michael Marrero canceled a scheduled interview to discuss the situation and issued a news release detailing that the city decided not to renew the lease. That release came after Hoven told a crowd assembled at UTPB, "The city of Odessa did not in any form or fashion cancel this contract. We do not own this property. It is university land, and they did send a letter, and it is public. University sent word to the city of Odessa canceling the 25-year contract." However, the letter he refers to is not a cancellation, but rather an acknowledgement that the lease was ending. It was at the same rally of players from local associations who are unhappy with the situation that Hoven said he was going to make an announcement that's going to come with a little bit of controversy about floating a bond issue. He did not address why the city would walk away from 25 years of improvements at the UTPB fields and start all over on a new recreation facility. Animal Shelter Construction Underway by Michael Bauer. With the current Odessa Animal Shelter showing its age, city officials were finally able to break ground on a new facility during a ceremony Friday morning. The new animal shelter will be located right next to its current location at 910 West 42nd Street. "We're thankful for our previous and current council to get us to this point," Assistant City Manager Philip Uricchia said. "It has been a long process to go through the design and construction. We have about a year of construction that'll take place. We're going to look forward to that being a good construction and get this great facility to the public. It's a vision that's been in the works for about 5 years. Through that was locating the funding, the land, and the design, and now we're able to get the construction going," Uricchia said. The current shelter is close to 45 years old, and Odessa Police Chief Michael Girk said that at that age, the building has developed some plumbing issues as well as issues with the structure itself. "You have to remember that the current shelter was created more as a pound," Girk said to those in attendance during the ceremony. "It was a place for stray animals to be taken to for a short amount of time to allow owners a chance to reclaim them. The business model of that shelter has changed. The goal today is to release as many animals that are taken in as possible through reclaims and adoptions. The new shelter will be larger to allow for more animals as they wait to be adopted or reclaimed. We'll have medical facilities for the vets to perform spayed or neuter that will help reduce the stray population in our community and be a much better working environment." The new shelter is expected to be 20,538 square feet. The cost of the construction of the shelter alone is $8.5 million, Uricchia said. "It did come within budget, and our price for this shelter is within the budget, as we said, but it's also comparable to other facilities that we've seen in our area," Uricchia said. "We're pleased to have a good budget on this project and to start construction. The construction is expected to last a year, barring any significant weather delays, such as the winter storm from this past February. Obviously, there are things that can be thrown in, like another snow apocalypse like we had this year," Girk said. "Mother Nature steps in and causes delays, but it's roughly a year, and what that includes is the building and a partial teardown of the old facility." Another item that Girk pointed out about the new shelter is the culmination of a lot of work that is going into it. "Moving forward and ahead, you can look at the old shelter and compare it to the renderings of the new shelter, and it's night and day," Girk said. "We're going to have a facility that provides great housing and a great working environment for our city employees, and it's going to be a facility that citizens can be proud of." City Councilwoman Detra White also gave a few remarks during the ceremony. "With this new shelter, what my vision is that we're going to have a place that this will be the first place people come when they want to find a new pet," White said. "When they need a new pet for their home, they are going to be comfortable bringing their family here. This is an expensive project, but it's not just for the animals that are brought in, but also for our community, where people can either find their lost pet or to adopt a new one." She also recognized the shelter volunteers and employees. "I want to thank them for that service to our community," White said. "They have a love for these animals, and they want the best for them." Quick hits. Back to School Bash. Music City Mall, 4101 East 42nd Street, has scheduled a Back to School Bash from noon to 6 p.m. July 31st. There will be giveaways, live shows, characters, photo booth, and school supply drive. The event is free and open to the public. For more information, visit musiccitymall.net. Will Seminar. The Omicron Epsilon Lambda chapter of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated has scheduled a Will Seminar from 10 a.m. to noon, August 7th, at Golf Course Road Church of Christ, 3500 West Golf Course Road, Midland. For more information, call the Gavin Norris Law Office at 432-279-0858. Spanish Comedy Show. Knockout de Risas has been scheduled at 8 p.m. August 14th at Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM, 1788 Midland. Doors open at 6 p.m. Featured comedians will be El Costeño, El Norteño, and Gustavo Manguilla. This show is a comedy show that will be performed entirely in Spanish. For tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/RBY9HCTN. ECISD can now develop teachers locally. In an ongoing effort to ensure every student has a highly qualified, highly effective teacher in the classroom, Ector County ISD took a historic step forward Friday morning when the State Board for Educator Certification unanimously approved ECISD's Educator Prep Program, Odessa Pathway to Teaching. Ector County ISD becomes just the third school district in Texas to have a teacher preparation and certification program, a news release said. "We're thrilled with this unanimous approval," ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray said in the release. "Having the ability to certify our own teachers is another tremendous step forward in growing and developing our own outstanding teachers." ECISD Executive Director of Talent Development, Ashley Osborne, said the district is committed to preparing teaching candidates to be highly effective teachers. "The Odessa Pathway to Teaching program allows our district to cultivate talent pipelines and ensure high-quality teachers are working with our students every day. Candidates in the Odessa Pathway of Teaching program are supported throughout their experience, from selection and preparation through their internship year and beyond," Osborne said in the release. When ECISD implemented OPT, it operated under the umbrella of TNTP, the New Teacher Project. Beginning on September 1st, OPT is fully ECISD's Teacher Training and Certification Program. It is coordinated by the district's Talent Development Department and is centered around hands-on, in-person training with experienced ECISD educators. It is open to candidates who already have a bachelor's degree and are interested in becoming a teacher. ECISD teachers and instructional leaders with years of classroom experience have designed this specialized training program, focusing on the most important skills effective educators bring to their classroom. Applications for Odessa Pathway to Teaching will be accepted this fall for anyone interested in joining. Contact the Talent Development Team at 432-456-0089. MCH partners with Encompass and MMH. Midland Memorial Hospital announced Thursday that Medical Center Hospital of Odessa has become a joint owner of Encompass Health Rehabilitation Hospital of Midland, Odessa, an 80-bed inpatient rehabilitation hospital that has served the Midland-Odessa region for 27 years. Medical Center Hospital of Odessa's partnership became effective on July 1st. We are pleased to partner with Medical Center Hospital of Odessa with our existing hospital in the Permian Basin, Frank Brown, president of Encompass Health's Southwest Region, said in a news release. This tri-venture is a true representation of healthcare providers coming together for the benefit of the community. We're proud of the great work we've accomplished with the team at Midland Memorial Hospital over the years and couldn't be more excited to bring another leading healthcare provider into our partnership. Russell Myers, Chief Executive Officer and President of Midland Health, said they believe the health of the community extends far beyond hospital walls, and that starts with key partners such as Encompass Health. Since 2016, our longstanding relationship has been a true benefit to our community and allowed for access to a continuum of care. We're proud to have Medical Center Hospital join in on the collaboration to expand the benefit in the Permian Basin, Myers said in the release. MCH Chief Executive Officer and President Russell Tippin agreed that the care of its patients doesn't stop when they leave the hospital, thus making this partnership with Encompass Health and Midland Memorial Hospital is extremely important. To have several partners in the region all working toward a goal of making sure the people of the Permian Basin are prioritized and cared for is a big step for our community. We're proud to be a part of this venture, Tippin said in the release. Complementing local acute care services, Encompass Health Rehabilitation Hospital of Midland, Odessa cares for patients recovering from debilitating illnesses and injuries, including strokes and other neurological disorders, brain injuries, spinal cord injuries, amputations, and complex orthopedic conditions. The hospital provides physical, occupational, and speech therapies that aim to restore functional ability and quality of life, and 24-hour care by registered nurses, many of whom are certified in rehabilitation nursing. Odessa American obituaries and death notices from Saturday. Roy Dwayne Miller, Longview, Texas. Roy Dwayne Miller, age 93 of Longview, passed away Thursday, July 15, 2021, surrounded by the family in his home. He was born on August 29, 1927, in Cheyenne, Wyoming, to the late Stanley and Evelyn Stanton Miller. On January 23, 1953, Roy married the love of his life, Rita Joyce Gober, and together they raised a beautiful family. He is survived by his daughters, Mina McCullum and husband Randy of Longview, Patricia Brooks and husband Michael Ray of Grand Bay, Alabama, Teresa Rogers of Grand Bay, Alabama, 9 grandchildren, 28 great-grandchildren, and 2 great-great-grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his wife of 67 years, Rita Miller, parents, brother Donald Skinner, and sister Mary Jean Hutchinson, and great-grandson Cameron Phillips. Services are under the direction of Crowley Funeral Home in Gladewater. Graveside services were held on Sunday, July 18th at 1 p.m. at the New White Oak Cemetery in White Oak, Texas, with brother Donnie Barron officiating. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be sent to Calvary Baptist Church Recovery Fund, 4715 Tenaryville Road, Longview, Texas, 75604. Krista Lee Aguirre Cervantes, Odessa. Krista Lee Cervantes, 41, of Odessa, passed away on July 20th at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa, Texas. Krista was born October 2nd, 1979, to Augustine and Chris Aguirre in Odessa, Texas. She is survived by 2 sons, Jesse Lee Cervantes and Hadrian Diego Cervantes. Her parents, Chris Venable and husband Robert, and Augustine Torres Aguirre and wife Kay. 2 siblings, Joaquin Aguirre and wife Stephanie, and Adriana Rodriguez and husband Natividad, and her maternal grandparents, Lario and Carolina Armendariz, and paternal grandmother, Idubijes Vico Aguirre. She is preceded in death by her paternal grandfather, Nolberto S. Aguirre. Funeral services will be held Saturday, July 24th, 2021 at 4 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Death notice from Saturday. Juanita Faye Dodson, Odessa. Juanita Faye Dodson, 90, of Odessa, died Thursday, July 22, 2021 in Odessa. Graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. July 26, 2021. Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, July 25th. UTPB athletic saga continues. Woodley says fields should be open to all Odessans, by Ruth Campbell. The Odessa City Council will decide Tuesday on whether to allow local sports associations to remove structures and other improvements from the UTPB athletic complex, a move University of Texas System Lawyers says is not allowed under a lease agreement that expires soon between the university and the city. Despite efforts by University of Texas Permian Basin to keep an agreement with the city of Odessa to provide sports fields to leagues and associations on campus, the city has rejected UTPB's proposal. City officials are mostly mum on the issue of not renewing the lease and whether they will gut the sprawling athletic complex when the lease expires on August 31st. Councilman Mark Mata did say he thought the city could reach an agreement on the equipment and other improvements. UTPB President Sandra Woodley wants the site to remain intact, saying that a number of sports organizations have already expressed interest in the fields now that the city lease is expiring. That's important, as during the last 25 years, basically, only a handful of local groups have been allowed to use the fields. The fields, UTPB officials say, should be open to anyone who wants to use them at any time. But that's not what has been the norm, because the city of Odessa entered into user agreements with several local organizations, including youth and adult softball and youth soccer associations. And as the associations have become more involved with the operation of the fields, access to the public appears to have become more limited. The softball fields at the complex are locked, and there is even a sign there warning, fields are for OGSA use only. The current lease agreement with the city does not allow subleasing the fields without prior approval from UTPB. The city, however, through the years, entered into user agreements with some of the local sports organizations for use of the fields. Woodley said the issue with the current arrangement is that those associations didn't want others to use the fields, and more concerning, some of those associations in turn subleased the space to other groups and charged them for it and pocketed the money. Tatum Hubbard, UTPB Chief of Staff and Executive Director of Communications and Marketing, said that subleasing for profit is the definition of a commercial enterprise. That's also important, as the current lease called for a $1 per year rental fee to be paid to UTPB, plus 10% of the gross proceeds from all commercial activities, excluding food and beverage sales. Conducted on the leased premises by its agents, contracts, and subleases, the agreement states, it's hard to make the case it's not a commercial enterprise with tens of thousands of dollars in the bank of some of these groups who have subleased our property and made a profit off the university, and that is not permitted, Woodley said. Odessa City Councilman Steve Thompson on Friday indicated that part of what broke down the negotiations was the city allowing members of the associations to do the negotiations with UTPB. I want people to know this is what happened, he said. The associations asked council to step aside and let them negotiate and then come back to us. We were willing to do whatever was needed to be done to stay there, and they couldn't reach an agreement. Thompson said he didn't blame UTPB for wanting a percentage, but that the associations were absolutely against that. Woodley said the city was asked to provide 5 years' worth of financial information to document field operations, but could not. She said there were a few years, but not a full 5 years' worth of records. Under the current lease, quarterly statements were supposed to be provided to UTBB, but were not. On the topic of removing the equipment and other improvements of the complex, Thompson said that City Attorney Natasha Brooks and Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton had been meeting all morning. If it is our equipment, I would say let's leave it there so the community can still use it and benefit from it, he said. But if most of it belongs to the associations and we installed it, we have to remove it. Thompson said the associations went into negotiations against everything in the first place. He said Tom Martinez, president of the Odessa Soccer Association Board of Directors, was the one who told UTPB that his soccer association didn't need them and they could find another place to practice and play games. They knew full well that they were not going to be able to use those facilities if we were not going to be able to work out an agreement. Now they are trying to throw the city under the bus, Thompson said. Martinez spoke at a community rally at UTPB Park Fields Tuesday and continued to say that everyone else uses the facility at no cost. We didn't pay a dime. We haven't paid a dime, he said at that time. There was a $25 fee that was paid from the city to the university in the original lease agreement, $1 per year, and then, of course, the city of Odessa agreed to maintain the facility, and that's why it looks the way it does for that lease agreement. In the agreement, it does note a 10% fee, but that was for commercial entities. We were advised by the city that it does not include 501c3 nonprofits, and that would be all the organizations for youth sports. If you're out there doing something to make a buck, then that would apply, but not for the 501c3s, he said. However, he did not address if the association had made money off of subleases or other agreements with other sports organizations. During that same Tuesday rally, a lot of information was tossed around from speakers and those in the crowd. One item that has come up repeatedly is the assertion by some affiliated with the groups that UTPB really just wants to run the associations off and build a football stadium. Hubbard said nothing could be further from the truth. That's not even on our radar, she said. There are no plans for a football stadium, and if we did build one, we don't know where it would go. She said talks about a basketball arena are more likely, but that it would likely be located on the opposite side of the campus. The annual cost of maintaining the fields is between $500,000 and $600,000. Although the lease is coming to an end, Woodley said the university plans to continue giving access for local sports associations and others, as well as using the complex for sports tourism. The going rate to rent a field is between $50 and $60 an hour, Woodley said. But there may be a daily rate for extended use, she added. We're working to try to get the best rate possible. The rates will depend on our success at being able to pull in private dollars to make up for the city's investment that we lost on the fields, but we think it will still be affordable. The proposed UTPB plan for a new lease agreement was designed to obtain University of Texas System approval and meet all its policy and legal requirements. The plan proposed by UTPB would include the City of Odessa's investment to maintain the fields, part of the current contract, fees from local associations to use the fields that would be minimized through city support, financial support from outside tournaments. As part of the proposal, UTPB would also centrally manage the finances, operations, and scheduling of the fields. Athletics Hall of Fame debuts in October. Nominations open now for Odessa athletes. Sports has always held a special place in the heart of Odessa, and the Odessa American is partnering with the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center and the Texas Press Association to create a special moment and place for those who have contributed to the city's legend of athletics. The Odessa American announces the inaugural Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center presents the Odessa Athletics Hall of Fame dinner and induction, slated for October 14th. Nominations for the inaugural Hall of Fame class are now being accepted by the newspaper. An online form is available on the newspaper's website, www.oaoa.com, and printed forms may be obtained from and returned to the newspaper's office at 700 North Grant Avenue, Suite 800. Odessa has such an incredible and rich history in sports, and we believe the people who have contributed to this legacy should be recognized for all they have done, OA publisher Patrick Canty said. If ever there were a place so right for an Athletics Hall of Fame program, Odessa is it. And we are so excited that the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center has agreed to support this effort as our presenting sponsor. The Texas Press Association, the statewide organization that represents the Texas newspaper industry, also believes in this celebration, and we look forward to working with them as well to organize what we hope will be a new tradition in this community that celebrates those who have helped distinguish us in athletics. Deadline for nominations is August 16th. Canty said a committee of newspaper and community leaders will select 5 honorees from the nominations and celebrate the first class of inductees at a dinner and ceremony at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center in October. Canty explained the honor will not be limited to just athletes. To be sure, through the years we have had incredible athletes who either distinguished themselves while in Odessa as students or later as professionals. We've had high school stars, but we have also been the springboard for the likes of professional football, basketball and baseball players, golfers, world champion cowboys, and Olympians. But we can't forget that there have also been countless coaches and sports administrators who were key in molding these athletes and noteworthy programs. They, too, deserve recognition, and that is what we aim to do with the Hall of Fame. Local News Roundup. Free Virtual Seminar. Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Permian Basin will partner with High Sky Children's Ranch to present a free virtual seminar for parents navigating their children's teenage years. The virtual seminar will be held via Zoom from 5:45 p.m. to 6:45 p.m. Tuesday. The seminar is being offered in response to requests from parents throughout the Permian Basin and will provide information on the reasons why teens can be so difficult, as well as tips and strategies for getting back to calm. The session will be conducted by Amber Chapman, Clinical Director of High Sky Children's Ranch. While the seminar is free, reservations are requested so that attendees can be provided with the Zoom link. Anyone interested who does not have access to Zoom can make arrangements to participate at the Big Brothers Big Sisters office at 714 West Louisiana Avenue in Midland. To RSVP, call Big Brothers Big Sisters at 432-687-0195 between 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday. Deadline for reservations is 6 p.m. Monday. Visit www.bbspermianbasin.org. Grant Writing Workshop. Odessa Arts has scheduled a grant writing workshop for organizations interested in applying to 2022 grant cycle from 10:30 a.m. to noon Tuesday at the MCM Elegante, 5200 East University Boulevard. To be eligible for a grant, an organization must attend one session. The grant workshop is free, but registration is required. To register, go to tinyurl.com/K3TMADC. Odessa Arts provides grants for events and programs that promote the arts in Ector County and encourage tourism to the area. Grants will be awarded in September for the calendar year 2021. Organizations can RSVP by calling 432-337-1492 or emailing ramsi@odessaarts.org. Space is limited. For more information or events happening in the city, view calendar at odessaarts.org/calendar. A masquerade ball benefiting the Boys and Girls Club of the Permian Basin will take place from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. August 14th at the Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main Street, Midland. The event will include live entertainment, dancing, dinner, open bar, silent and live auction, games, and more. Sponsorships available. For tables, tickets, or more information, email tim@basinkids.org. Pet Splash. The City of Odessa Parks Department has scheduled a pet splash from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. August 21st at the Sherwood Aquatic Center, 4520 North Dixie Boulevard. There will be music, giveaways, best trick, dressed, personality, and pet owner look-alike contests, free watermelon, prizes, and more. There is no cost to attend. For rules or information, visit odessa-tx.gov/657/pet-splash. Opinion from the Odessa American. Our view. UTPB is not the villain. The point. Field of Dreams turns into a hot mess as negotiations end with no agreement. There is an age-old saying, no good deed goes unpunished. That adage must be swimming around in the collective minds of leadership at the University of Texas Permian Basin and the University of Texas system amid a dust-up over public access sports fields on UTPB's campus. At issue is a soon-to-expire 25-year lease agreement between UTPB at the City of Odessa for public use of a soccer and softball complex on the eastern edge of the university's campus. The university has been unable to reach agreement with the city for some sort of contract extension that meets the policy and legal requirements of the UT system, and they formally and politely informed the city that the lease agreement expires August 31st. Now leaders of local nonprofit youth soccer and softball associations are howling foul and have been hell-bent on trying to paint the university as a villain, kicking out thousands of youngsters who play on the fields practically every week. Well, we're going to throw a flag, blow our whistle, and penalize the association's representatives 15 yards for BS, and we don't mean Bachelor of Science. Here's the deal, folks. A quarter of a century ago, when the land in question was nothing but hard-scrabbled scrub, pretty much in the middle of nowhere, the university entered into an agreement with the city to allow the municipality to develop the land into a type of public park, featuring sports amenities for all to enjoy. In return, the city, the lessee, was to pay UTPB an annual rental fee of $1. The city had the option of paying the fee all at once and up front, $25, which it apparently did. The agreement also specified that as part of the rental agreement, UTPB was to receive 10% of the gross proceeds from all commercial activities, except food and beverage sales, conducted on the leased premises by lessee, its agents, contractors, and sublessees. Enter the associations. Under some arrangement with the city, they turned up as somewhat of a sublessee. Whether this was approved in writing by UTPB as required under the agreement is unclear at this point, but the land was developed into a prime sports complex, which the associations ultimately controlled with an iron fist. Although the complex is supposed to be open to any member of the public, signs have been erected on portions of the property warning that all the softball complex is for use only by the OGSA. Others keep out. Mind you, UTPB did not erect these signs and is scratching its institutional head as to who exactly did. There have even been reports of people who have been run off the fields by individuals not affiliated with either the university or the city, and some outside tournaments have been held at the site, supposedly subcontracted out. Once again, this was apparently done by neither the city nor the university. One could argue that what was once worthless land has now been making someone money like a basement printing press. Now, as already noted, the university was likely paid the $1 a year rental fee up front way back when, but for the last 25 years, no one can point to a single instance in which the university has received a single penny of rental as part of the 10% requirement specified in the lease. That's a ton of money, folks. Association representatives argue they are not liable for the 10% fee because they are nonprofits and thus not engaged in commercial activity. But if they have subcontracted the fields out to other outside groups, the argument could be made that they very well did engage in commercial activity and are therefore liable for some sort of payments. And by the way, if they are using the argument that they are exempt because they are a nonprofit, then their financial records are public information, and anyone should be allowed, by law, to review those records to see where all the money has gone all these years. All we know is that for all its good intentions, the university has pretty much received nothing all these years, except a lot of undeserved misery of late. The university had proposed a new agreement designed to meet UT system requirements, which includes ensuring the system is receiving compensation for use of the land that is tied to its fair market value. The proposal calls for, 1, the City of Odessa's investment to maintain the fields, which is required under the current contract. 2, fees from all associations that would be minimized through city support. 3, financial support from outside tournaments. The proposal notes that achieving the plan would require UTPB to centrally manage the finances, operations, and scheduling of the fields. Wow! The university owns that land. Why shouldn't they have the right to do just that? By the way, the associations would still be allowed to play on the fields. They just wouldn't be controlling something that really isn't theirs. Where it all stands now is that Major Javier Hoven has taken a let's-move-on approach, saying that he plans to propose a bond issue to fund construction of a city sports complex, something we suspect probably should have been done years ago. Meantime, Odessans need to keep something top of mind as all of this plays out. Really, there are only two victims in all of this: the thousands of well-meaning kids and parents who have paid the associations lots of money to play a sport they love, and UTPB.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.